Welcome to the Marshall Pruitt Podcast and our Week in IndyCar show, presented by Cooper Tires, and also brand new for 2019, brought to you by the Justice Brothers. And that's going to be a bit of a fun story I'll share with you in just a moment. Our guest this week, 2018 Indy Lights champion, and I would say also one of the most promising young IndyCar drivers we've seen in a good while, that being Mexico's Patricio O'Ward, a.k.a. Pato O'Ward. Fun call with him as usual. Spent about 45 minutes, he dialed in from Mexico getting ready for this weekend's Race of Champions, where he will be trying to knock down the international competitors arriving there. That kid's a blast. He, along with his teammate Colton Herta at the Harding Steinbrenner Honda team, I think the future is incredibly bright for them. And as a result, I think that brightness is going to be everything that helps IndyCar bring in not only more fans, but just new fans, younger generation of fans. I think these two can really connect to where IndyCar is trying to go with fans that aren't necessarily of the older demographic who continue to support it and continue to form a big portion of its fan base. So just love where Pato and Colton, Chip Ganassi Racing's Felix Rosenquist, and just all the young drivers coming in for their rookie seasons, plus the Zach Veaches and others who are in back for their second year. It's a pretty impressive time with this influx of new talent. I know Pato is going to be one that we continue to talk about quite a bit. So we'll get to him here in just a little bit. As usual, you all send in questions for me as well, which I open the show with. Get to those directly before we get to our featured guest. Also have to thank Toronto Motorsports and their ongoing support. We're still working on what we're going to do. We might continue to give away a t-shirt to whomever asks the question that I like most from each episode. We did that all throughout 2018. Not sure if we're going to continue that program. Still kicking that one around, but it's definitely on the horizon. So while we don't have someone to name here in this episode, just want to say thanks again to TorontoMotorsports.com for all the great support they provide us. Also to Cooper Tires, which I mentioned at the outset, they are back for a second season as one of the two key partners supporting this little Marshall Pruitt podcast. And I mentioned the Justice Brothers. They have been a really long and enduring part of my life, which is why I'm so happy to have them as a part of the podcast. The very first thing I did in motor racing as a young gopher, not even entrusted to turning a wrench, back in about 1986, working in the SCCA Super V, the pro racing series there, kind of equivalent to maybe Pro Mazda. Primary sponsor was Justice Brothers, among some other automotive lubricants and chemicals that were sold through the team owner slash driver Mike McHugh and his Bay Area distributing company. Justice Brothers was genuinely, truly the first things that I was allowed to touch and use, cleaning the brakes, cleaning the car, whatever it was. JB, at the formation of my career in motor racing, even more fun on a personal level as well. Back in 1998 at the Indy 500, when our little Thomas Knapp Motorsports Genoa Racing team qualified the middle of the front row with Greg Ray, we had a title sponsor coming into that 98 month of May. Aptex, Apelion Technologies. They'd sponsored us at Phoenix, I believe, to start. Their check never showed up, and that's not a good thing. Going into the most expensive month of the year, we kept pressing on, ended up having that great front row qualifying. Kurt Cavan, who is now the VP of Communications. How is it that I struggle to say the word communications? Yet another flaw in my personality. And I'm not going to edit that out either. I'll just leave that in. Kurt Cavan, currently IndyCar's VP of Communications, writer then for the Indianapolis Star, saw Kurt in Gasoline Alley and said, "Hey, boy, we could use any help possible, just even a little short story in the Star about little team trying to do good, has qualified well, but we're running out of gas, running out of fumes, might not make it through the rest of the month." All true. Kurt wrote that story, which is incredibly helpful. That got picked up, I believe, by the Associated Press. And as the team manager and engineer, assistant engineer in the team as well, Got a call from Ed Justice Jr., who said, "Hey, read the story, love what you guys are doing. How can the Justice Brothers be part of it?" And so Ed and I on the phone, hadn't met in person yet, but worked out a deal. Justice Brothers came on board as one of the many sponsors that helped us get through the month. And although we broke the gearbox, did get a chance to lead a little bit, made some waves as a minnow among the sharks in the series at the time. So this relationship with Ed and the Justice Brothers started when I was 16, extended through my professional career when Ed and I came to terms on a deal for the TKM Genoa team at Indy. It's been great getting to know Ed in the years since, and the Justice Brothers team. Pretty cool, too, that Ed, also someone who does broadcasting, has his own radio show, has been in the podcast space as well. Ed saying, "Hey, we really like what you're doing now, Pruitt, with your podcast, and we would love to work with you and do some fun stuff." So going to try and do a lot of that, try and do some unique and interesting things, honestly, just celebrating you, the listeners, and you, the fans of motor racing, with a couple, if not dozens of things that we'll roll out and do throughout the year. So incredibly pleased to say that Justice Brothers is now on board, along with Cooper Tires, on the masthead of everything that we do here with our little Marshall Pruitt podcast, Week in IndyCar, Week in Sports Cars, you name it. So, and that honestly comes back to you as well, and thanking you, because if I did not have the listener base that I do in the download numbers to offer, then it'd probably be just me talking into a small microphone in my closet. But thanks to you all, and thanks to your ongoing support and encouragement, things that our friends at Cooper Tires and Justice Brothers and Toronto Motorsports and others have seen, this little thing is becoming more of a thing. So just want to say thank you there, and also welcome Justice Brothers into the family. All right, let's get to your questions. A good selection of things that are rather different, and this is what I love too. We get the silly questions, we get the serious ones, and most that have been sent in for me are more on the serious side, so we will jump through them as quickly as I can. I'm going to start off with Matthew Featherman. He says, "Hey, with the move away from Verizon as title sponsor, will this open up more team sponsorship opportunities?" Matthew says Telmex comes to mind, as well as some newer players in the U.S. like Mint Mobile. I believe it should. I would also say that without that very recognizable name, Verizon, Matthew, as the title sponsor, I think that's going to be the key. I mean, NTT, from a Japan and Japanese standpoint, is in that telecommunications space. It's just not something, to my knowledge, that they're really involved in here in the United States. So if that were the other way around, I think that while NTT isn't something that is yet a household name, there could have been some issues if that was the case, but it isn't, to my knowledge. So I do think for teams that want and have been pursuing new title sponsors for their own efforts, would I love to see the AT&T car versus Will Power's Verizon Mobile and a name the variety of other mobile and communications companies getting in? Yes, I would love to see that. Where I'm hoping this gets even better, and this is stepping away, Matthew, just a little bit from the title sponsor question, is Verizon was very active when they came on board as a sponsor of the IndyCar series, as its title sponsor. For those who followed back then, we saw it, we felt it, TV commercials, a lot of activation. Some of you might know the story that the CEO who signed off on that deal, he actually, his tenure there ended not too long after. And once he was gone and once a new CEO came in into power, motor racing really was not something of great interest. So not a surprise as well that once the person who greenlit this happened to leave and retire, that not too long after the big TV commercials and lots of activation, it came into a bare minimum support system where they were not spending, were not activating. The name was there, but there wasn't much being done to get IndyCar out to hopefully more viewers and create new fans. NTT, again, not yet a name here that is going to have folks running and jumping in and being curious, but I would have to imagine that if they're willing to spend and activate and market, similar to how Verizon did in the beginning, but sustain that, that could change. So the thing I'm most hopeful for is that NTT will indeed help bring IndyCar to both coasts, to the Midwest, all that really truly tie the country together from a marketing and activation standpoint. If we have that, that's a huge win. There's another question that I have here asking more about the details of NTT, so I'll save that for that question there. Daniel Kincaid asks, are there any chances of IndyCar switching to a 7-speed gearbox? Right now, it's currently a 6-speed with the new car in a few years. He says, reliability-wise, it should be fine, but what kind of increases in cost or weight would there be? I would say that there's certainly a possibility, Daniel. The choice to maybe increase from a 6-speed to a 7-speed would likely be driven by the manufacturers, by Chevy and Honda. And by the time we get to that new car in a few years, I would say I'd be, shocked. Might be a little heavy-handed, but I'd be very surprised if we weren't talking about a third manufacturer. Maybe in next week's show I can get into that a little bit more. But there's some stuff taking place behind the scenes. Not saying that it's all signed and sealed, not at all. But there's just some good developments going on behind the scenes that I hope to be able to share a little bit more next week. And apologize that I can't do that right now. Back to the number of gears question. 6, 7, 8. I'd say anything in that range would certainly be an option. Depending on the revs, I would say, Daniel, that IndyCar is considering for its 2021 engines, that increase from the current 2.2-liter twin-turbo V6 formula up by 200 cc's to a 2.4-liter. If they're considering spinning that harder, getting a few more revs out of it, I don't think they will. But if they wanted to do that, then I would say the more gears, the better, because that way you can keep the motor, revving harder, having to rev over a shorter span with more gears would certainly be something to consider. I also don't know if this is an area that anyone in IndyCar would really be looking at saying, gotta increase that number by 1 or 2 gears for any particular reason. So next time I catch up with Jay Fry and his technical team, I'll try and remember to ask if it's even on their radar. Gordon Martinez asks, which Texas race will have the best turnout, Circuit of the Americas or Texas Motor Speedway? We know, Gordon, for sure that the crowds at Texas Motor Speedway have been on the decline, visually at least. I know that the track president, CEO, Eddie Gossage, is always combative anytime someone says that things aren't awesome and beautiful. Just doing the old opening my eyes and seeing what's in front of me test, we know, obviously, it's a great track, it's a great race, it's usually really fun to watch. We just haven't had the turnout that was once there. Hoping that will change. I think the issue here, Gordon, and I've mentioned this on the podcast before, even before Circuit of the Americas was announced, having been there for just about everything except for MotoGP and Formula One, which I think IndyCar kind of falls into that other category, turnouts have just been horrible. For sports cars, a variety of sports cars there. A lot of different series have been there. Everything from the V8 supercars to IMSA to what I think Grand Am maybe before the merger. The World Endurance Championship, Pirelli World Challenge Series. Yeah, just this kind of domestic thing hasn't really seemed to work there. If I'm just talking numbers, do I think IndyCar will put up better numbers than all of the series I just mentioned? And I realize that the WEC is an international series, but it was a part of kind of a combo event for many years with IMSA. Do I think IndyCar will put up better numbers at COTA than all of those series? Yes, without a doubt. Just has better brand recognition, brand name. Still not expecting big numbers, though. That's that's the other thing here, Gordon. We want and hope to turn up to TMS and have an hour wait to get in because the line of cars is so long and backed up. So many people turning up. We would love to have that problem. Love to have that at COTA. Do I think it'll happen at either one? I don't. Want it to happen. Fearful that it won't. So to get back to your central question, I don't know if I have an answer, because I think by the numbers, TMS should have the bigger crowd, although it's not big enough. And COTA, it's a question mark, but past history tells us if it isn't a big imported globetrotting series like Formula One or MotoGP that has a large traveling crowd coming in to watch it, we as Americans have not turned out in droves for other products there. So, but obviously we're going to find out here in about 2 months. Let's see, we're going to go to Josecki100 from Reddit. It says, good year, MP. Do you know what kind of staff McLaren is hiring for their Indy 500 team? European staff, American staff, a mix of both? Also, do you have any idea of how ready they are at the moment? The first test was announced for April, quote, only 3 months away from now. Now, a couple of things. Haven't written about some of this intentionally. Waiting to see a certain team principal next week in Daytona to maybe see if he can offer any quotes or thoughts on some of the staff hiring I've heard about. I believe that there are definitely some additional senior positions that have been filled. I know that there are some American staff mechanics and otherwise that have been told, you know, hold station, we'll get back to you soon, might be able to add you on, etc. So I think it will be a blend. I think it will be a largely European staff, but we'll definitely have some Americans involved. And at least in terms of who, I know that there are some Europeans that have been brought on board that haven't been announced yet. So in terms of how ready they are at the moment, you know, knowing that they are still, as you mentioned, a couple of months away from being on track, if you have qualified people, good people who know what they are doing, it won't take forever to put a car together and to get ready for the on-track portion of that test. I'd say the real driver, though, isn't just the getting ready for, you know, rolling out, turning the car's first laps in April. It would be, are we going to get that car completed and then on the proverbial 7-post shaker rig rolled into a wind tunnel? What kind of pre-testing, either educational, benchmarking things, R&D things might they want to do? That's the timeline they're working towards, which is getting everything ready so they can do all of that test, that test list, learn those items, figure some things out, and then when they do the first physical shakedown of the car in April, they won't essentially be starting their knowledge clock right there. They will already be a couple of months into it. Let's see, we'll go to Ryan Ward from Marshall. Do we have or know when we will have the details for the NBC Sports Gold piece of IndyCar's content? What will the cost actually be on it, etc.? And this is referring to the live streaming portion of NBC Sports' full season-long coverage of the IndyCar series. I don't have that answer for you now, Ryan. I can mention that I did reach out to a friend at NBC not too long ago asking this the last time someone dropped it on my plate, and they didn't really have an answer. And I obviously, we're not too far away from the start of the season, so I would have to guess that we will have info on this. You know, also, fair point too, a reporter asking a question before they have announced it publicly. For an institution as large as NBC and NBC Sports, I would not expect them to tell me before they told the rest of the world. So I love to give you guys everything I can when you ask questions. This is just one of those where they're holding off until they are ready to announce it. Let's see. Another one here from Reddit from Sad and Shy. Hey, Marshall, have you and French Fry, that being Sebastian Bourdais, been approached by the folks at AEW to join their ranks, referring to one of the independent pro wrestling leagues, and also mentions that Ring of Honor already has a cheeseburger, but you would definitely put the ham into hamburger. You know, believe it or not, Bourdais and I have not been approached to host anything in wrestling or anything. We've yet to receive our broadcast Emmys for the worst work ever done in video form. So, no, although that would be fun. I mean, I think I would be not the worst necessarily with the wrestling side, just because I watch enough of it with my wife to kind of know what we're looking at. What would be pure gold, though, would be our man Sebastian Bourdais attempting to offer commentary at any pro wrestling venue, whether it's an indie or a WWE. I think I'm safe in saying Seb doesn't know a damn thing about wrestling. So just getting his reaction, throwing him in the ring, I mean, come on. Okay, now I've got ideas of things I need to make happen. A couple more questions from y'all, then we will get to our boy Pato Award. Let's see, let's go to Carlos Gallardo, who asked a question for Pato as well. He says, any news about broadcaster streaming from Mexico in 2019 and in the future? Again, Carlos, that would really tie into the NBC Sports Gold Package, which I believe, and I'm sure I'll be told if I'm wrong, but I believe that is without borders, meaning if you can pay for that, you should be able to stream that anywhere. So I hope that's the case. On the streaming side for Mexico broadcast, I do not have that info. So I suck. Let's see. We'll go to Ben Cohen, MP. Any more specifics you can comment on regarding the announcement of NTT becoming the new title sponsor of IndyCar? How many years, monetary amount, etc.? Yeah, those are areas that right now, Ben, have not been cracked open to us from the series. I'll certainly be trying to get a feel for that in the next week or two. One thing which interesting to me, and you might have read this or in a variety of articles that came out this week, but the deal is between IndyCar and NTT Japan. And so, obviously, Mark Miles traveled to Japan along with Jay Fry to get this deal done. He was our guest, I believe the first week or so of December. Couldn't really mention it at the time, but when he and I were trying to schedule that in early November, he mentioned, well, you know, I'm going to be here, I'm going to be there, so I'm not free this time or that time, and also mentioned, oh, I'm heading to Japan and, you know, hope to come back with a title sponsorship deal done. So we knew that Japan was going to be the place where it emanated from. What's interesting to me here is, you know, and I confirmed this yesterday, that the NTT Data sponsorship we see on the number 10 Chip Ganassi car that was driven last year and, you know, previous years, Tony Kanaan, Ed Jones, and now this year with Felix Rosenquist, that's all done through their North American arm, two completely separate budgets. Because the question that I asked was, hey, will this new title sponsorship for IndyCar negatively impact or take away anything from the team side with NTT? And was very pleased to learn and confirm that, nope, two completely separate budgets. One does not harm or take away from the other. So we'll look for more of the details that you've asked, Ben, but at least security-wise, I would say that's something that makes me happy to learn that there's, in theory, no real jeopardy of anything negatively impacting the Nassi team. Ben also says, thank you for helping to educate us who didn't know much about Mr. Dan Gurney before his passing. I appreciate the perspective you've shared to understand why he's held in such high esteem by so many. My pleasure, Ben, with Monday being the one-year anniversary of Dan's death. Yeah. For those of us who are either fortunate to know him and consider him a friend or just to have seen his work and to be inspired by it, yeah. I know a lot of drivers will cite a Ayrton Senna, a Rick Mears, AJ Foyt, Mario Andretti, you know, as their driving inspirations. Dan was mine, honestly, more on the team owner, engineer, designer side, because that was a side of the sport that I knew was meant for me. So in that same regard, Big Eagle continues to be really my leading light in that regard, and also just an enduring inspiration, even though he is no longer with us. Let's see, let's go to Thomas Gross. Thomas says, maybe you can shed some light on the rules for testing an IndyCar. Is it limited by days or time on track? What stops a team from going to Sebring every week? Thomas, you're spot on. There are very clear and admittedly restrictive rules on track testing. I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but they can be looked up in IndyCar's rule book. There are a fixed number of private days. They're called team days. I think it's something like four. Again, I'll look that up when I get a chance here, but it's very, very, very few. Then you have the official series tests called open tests, like when we go to Circuit of the Americas about a month from now. That is the series test. That does not count. That two-day test does not count toward the teams. Call them private test days. So little bit separate there. Then they have things like a rookie test, right, where rookies get a little bit of extra track time and such. So But the bottom line is, yes, they are very, IndyCar is very restrictive, all in the name of trying to trim budgets, keep costs down, not just the costs of sending a team to a track, shipping the transporter, bunch of folks on flights and hotel nights and rental cars and food, not just the physical side on the for the teams, but also the engine mileage and keeping that down. The amount of Firestone tires that are needed to be purchased, just or that come as part of that lease. Just trying to look at ways where they can keep the budgets in check. I won't get back on the soapbox here, but if you've listened to the Week in IndyCar podcast presented by Cooper Tires and now the Justice Brothers, I have mentioned many times before that while you can cut costs by limiting track days, but there's also a little bit of willful ignoring the fact that, okay, what do teams do if you tell them they can't do something one way? They find another way. And so while it might not be on-track testing, teams spend small fortunes on virtual testing, on whether it's a simulator, whether it is software package through computer simulation, CFD on the aero side, wind tunnel days, shaker rigs, gearbox dynos, damper, you know, it just, think of the money that's being saved by not having 10 team test days, free test days, and dropping that number down to less than half of that. You go, great, we're saving money. And what do teams do? They say, well, okay, but guess what? We're not going to be limited on data and information. So we are going to put that money that we would have spent by going to the track, it ends up getting spent other ways. So you might then say, well, then why doesn't IndyCar just open it up and give teams, you know, 12 personal test days? Well, knowing the way that teams are and having worked for many teams and having had this mindset, we'd say, great, thanks for those 12 days we can go test on our own. And we're still going to spend a buttload of money on sim, on CFD, wind tunnel, this, that, and the other, because just because we're not on track doesn't mean we want to stop trying things. So it's just the way it is. So IndyCar, I get the thinking, and they're not wrong for trying to do that. There's no major criticism here, but whether it's 4 days or 40 days, the systematic reaction to it has been, we're spending money in off-track testing to learn as much as we can there. That's never going to change. Let's get to last one, maybe. This goes to our man or woman, not exactly sure. That's one of the great parts about Reddit and screen names. Counterbalanced Cove 2 says, Marshall, a lot of people here and on Robin Miller's mailbag have expressed interest in reading a book about his experiences and stories surrounding IndyCar in the Indy 500. In today's mailbag, he mentioned that he doesn't know if he'd have the energy to ever get around to it. I love this part. You're a talented writer. Well, all right, I might argue that, but you're a talented writer. Do you think the two of you could attempt it as a collaboration? Also mentions and closes with, Robin's Dinner with Racers episode is my favorite of the series. It would make me sad if his stories were not immortalized. I have to agree with everything you mentioned here in terms of this premise. It's funny and odd, this just came to mind, but you mentioned the Dinner with Racers episode. I think Robin was on season 2, maybe? Season 3? Whatever it was. When my pal Sean Heckman and Ryan Eversley invited me on in season 1, there was one slightly testy exchange. And it was very early on when we started recording. And the line of questioning was about Robin. And I could tell that for whatever reason at that time, maybe they weren't that fond of him, didn't think that much of him. It was a lot of questions about why does Robin Miller this, why does he do that, etc. And however I expressed it, I more or less barked back that, like, look, I don't know. You've got me here, so I don't know if you want me, if I'm here to answer your questions about my colleague Robin Miller, but, you know, those might be better questions posed to him. And at least left our recording there thinking, like, wow, I don't know what it is about Robin they don't like, but wow, all right, there's something here that isn't clicking. And then, you know, what was awesome to hear from Robin, hey, you know those Racer with Dinners guys? Yeah. He said, yeah, I'm going to be on, they've asked me to be on their show. I'm like, well, that's great. I guess they have seen the light, because Robin is just that. That man has a steel trap for a memory. He remembers everything, everywhere. Master storyteller, has done so many things. I mean, his life is just packed with experiences that, like you, this is something where, you know, it would be perfect in book form. I'm fortunate, having worked with him for more than a decade and worked, you know, shoulder to shoulder directly. You know, we usually speak, it's not every day, especially since he's been dealing with some health stuff, but, you know, on a normal week, we're on the phone 3, 4, 5 times sometimes. I have the good fortune of just hearing these stories and learning from him. And look, I'm 48 years old. I mean, I'm a grown-ass man, but, you know, Robin's, what, 70? 69, 70? He has been very much a mentor for me in learning how to do this new thing that I started doing after my career working on the team side. So I'd love to do it. And, yeah, it's a good question. I've actually had someone else in IndyCar mention that they want to work together to do a book. Don't know if, well, hopefully that one happens as well, but I have to see. I had not thought of this from a Robin and MP making a Robin book, but yeah, maybe that needs to happen. I'll just have to convince him that it'll at least help to buy all of the Pepsi and candy and chicken tenders he needs to survive. So, good idea. I'll throw that back at our man Miller and see if he's open. If nothing else, I can just throw a headset on him and we can record a buttload of podcasts, which we did as well. I don't know if I was better at my job, I would actually pull this up and have it ready and waiting for you. And actually, I'll search for it right now. But Miller, I'm trying to think. He was one of my early guests, kind of doing an abbreviated half hour long My Racing Life and Career episode. Yeah, that would be August of 2016, episode 49. We did that, and he definitely told some great stories. He always tells great stories. But yeah, we'll see what we can do. And if he's game, I would be game. Because yeah, you're spot on. He needs to be immortalized in a book. He's a bit of an immortal character for us in the sport. Rally around him. Give him hell on a daily basis. But yeah, we need to get some of his crazy antics in print. And hopefully on audio as well for you to enjoy. All right, let's get going with our young Mexican ace, Pato O'Ward, our second new episode of The Week in IndyCar in 2019, brought to you by Cooper Tires and the Justice Brothers. Pato O'Ward, Patricio O'Ward, how are you doing, my man? It's been a little while since you've had a chance to catch up, but tell us how you have been, and then we're going to get into a ton of great questions that have come in for you.
It's good, man. Thanks for the call up, and so far it's been a good year. Getting ready for Race of Champions this weekend, and then shifting focus to all the IndyCar stuff coming up, and honestly just aching to get back in a car.
Yeah, it must hurt when you read about the testing Monday and Tuesday at Sebring, and realizing that, wah, 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 you weren't there to play. I know you're going to be testing next month and such, but I still imagine that you're like, come on, man, I don't want to read about other people testing. I want to be the guy who is testing.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's been so long. I mean, since Sonoma, it's been, 5 months or so?
Too many months.
4 or 5 months. So just too much time without being in a car. So I just want to jump back into something that fast, preferably an Indy car.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, let's do this. Let's jump into our questions. I know we got you here for about 45 minutes or so. You are a busy man. You are heading out tomorrow. You're actually calling in from your home country. So thanks for making the long distance call here. Let's go to one that is obviously central to what's going to dominate the rest of your week. This question came in from Twitter and Race of Champions, the Race of Champions Mexico account. You said, we have one Who does Pato most want to beat at hashtag ROC Mexico? Sebastian Vettel or fellow IndyCar drivers Ryan Hunter-Reay and Joseph Newgarden?
I'd probably have to go with Vettel because I'm, you know, this year I'll have only one chance to beat him. So I'll go with Vettel. And then I'll try to shift over that mentality into the IndyCar season and I'll show some veterans up.
I like that. Or are you just saying you figure Hunter-Reay and Newgarden will be easy to handle in IndyCar? That's really what you're saying here, right? Those guys are chumps, they're washed up, and, you know, that's already a fact. All right, can we go ahead and publish that one?
No, I wish that was the case, but no, I mean, it's gonna be hard to get ahead of these guys. I mean, I got a taste of it in Sonoma. I think the speed is there, it's just I just have to get some more experience. It's hard to, because I feel like now, you know, you're racing against, you know, some of the best drivers in the world. You're not with, you know, just some rookies that come into a junior formula. So it makes things a little bit harder.
We've got our next question here from Steve Hamilton, and this also cracks open the door on some insights into your off season, but also, I guess, your entry into IndyCar this season as well, Pato. Steve says, when you go to a meeting with a potential sponsor, what is the message you use when pitching them on the value you can provide to their brand? And how do you determine and plan sponsor appearance time with team requirements throughout the weekend? And I like that because it also speaks to the fact, Pato, that you aren't stepping into this Harding Steinbrenner Honda program with just everything being offered to you. You're having to go out and bring partners to the program and work on that side too, which I don't know if everyone knows about. So how do you go into those potential meetings and plan and try and suggest the value you can return?
Yeah, so as of now, I'm trying to help the team as much as I can to gather up some sponsors because, you know, we all know that this is a sport where there's no sponsors, no supporters, it's not going to last long. So the goal here is to have a long-lasting relationship with sponsors and to continue in the series, obviously. So I feel like, you know, just going to a new sponsor, first you have to know, well, what their major focus is. I feel like in a lot of my situations, it's very, well, it helps to know if a Mexican or kind of like a Latin company is wanting to make a big hit or wanting to come into the U.S. market. That's usually a very good idea, a very good pitch that you can pitch to them. Like, you know, like I'm Mexican, I'm young, I'm making my way into the premier open wheel series in North America. And you know, you can't go higher than this. So, you know, it's a good match. You know, we could help each other, and that's kind of how you start, you know, going that way. And then if they're interested, they'll be like, oh, you know, talk to me some more. So then you're like, okay, well, there's these options. You know, we can do this, we can do that. You know, there's so many things that you can do, or so many ways you can go about it. But I feel like the first pitch is to tell them or to show them, like, look, we both have a goal. Our goal is the same. Let's work together and accomplish it.
And how is that process coming along for you in terms of being able to bring some partners to the program? Anything that you can do on that front, too, just from an obvious standpoint, it's not just going to help you in 2019. In theory, should help secure a longer-term future for you in IndyCar, but how's that been? I've heard suggestions that you're doing a good job there, but you and I haven't had a chance to catch up.
Yeah, so far, you know, I've got some people that are interested, but hopefully these talks get a bit more serious in the next few days. I actually have a few meetings in Mexico City, so leaving tomorrow, and hopefully there's some good news there. And it's just really hard, man. It is so hard to find new sponsors to come into the program. But I think there's some good talks going around, and I think there's some good, you know, potential relationships to be built. So hopefully at least one or two land before St. Petersburg so we can get the ball rolling.
There's also the question of how you fit in those sponsor obligations during an event in and among your driving obligations and team obligations. I mean, for the most part, those are things that you would communicate with your whomever the PR director is at the team so they can build out a schedule ahead of time so that you know that Friday morning at 9 a.m. you're going here, at 10 a.m. you've got an engineering meeting, and so on. I mean, that's the way things tend to work, at least.
Yeah, exactly. That's basically what it is. The press officer just basically gives us a schedule for the weekend. If it changes, you know, she'll give us an update, but they'll fit in everything accordingly, so we have some time to debrief and we have some time to do what we're there to do, which is to drive and to get, you know, to get results, because in the end, there's no results, there's going to be no sponsors. So they try to obviously make them happy, to keep us busy, but also try to give us some good time to get our personal stuff done. And that's usually how the weekends go about. And usually there's a lot of stuff Friday or Saturday. It usually calms down a little bit more on Sunday. Maybe Sunday like in the morning there's like appearance out at a suite or something to kind of give them an idea of what is expected of the race. But I think the most hectic day is probably qualifying day.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe in the morning of the race.
Yeah, that is for sure. Let's we just did the first two questions on Twitter. Let's jump over to Facebook. Got George O'Donnell who says, "Ciao, Pato. What preparations have you made this year for your IndyCar racing season, which might be different to how you've prepared for previous seasons in other categories?"
So right now I'm actually so after Christmas, obviously ate a lot, so have to burn everything off, and just kind of keeping the same rhythm as I've been in my light season. And then actually after Race of Champions, I'll be traveling to Texas. That's where my trainer's located at, and I'll be there for a few weeks in intensive training camp to be ready for CODA.
How about adding muscle and such? We know that Zach Veach, not the biggest guy in the world, he spent a lot of time adding muscle for his first IndyCar season. What about you? Has that been a focus, knowing that you don't have power steering to help turn these big bad boys?
So for me, when I first drove it, I was like, Jesus Christ, I'm not going to be able to drive this. But then it's just like your body kind of like gets used to it. And in Sonoma, I didn't really feel like I was missing any muscle. I didn't, obviously, you know, at the end of the race, you're fatigued, but I wasn't losing pace or anything. So, I mean, I was right on it for the whole race. The one that I struggled with the most, I probably have to say, my neck. Mm-hmm. So that's something that I'm going to be working on hard these next couple weeks to make sure it's nice and strong. There's nothing like being in the car. Being in the car is the best training device. But you know, just making some few, because I've never trained for my neck. I never needed it in lights or Pro Mazda or anything. Just being in the car made it strong enough. But I think since I haven't been in a car, I need to get it just a little bit stronger so I can at least hold it through the first few tests, and then it'll just—it's kind of like muscle memory. You don't know, once you're in the car for 3, 4, 5 days, you kind of get used to it, and your neck just automatically just becomes stronger.
Let's go to Adam Smith. All right, great question here, Adam. It says, Pato, there's a certain Formula One podcast from the Isle of Man where they recently said you have the most Irish name in the world. Do you have a response to them? And have you ever come across a situation where people were confused about your Mexican nationality because of your last name? Curious if that's happened, and also maybe any family or historical background behind the Irish last name.
So I think my dad's grandfather was Irish. And every time, like, oh, what's your name? Oh, Patricio O'Ward. They're like, oh, that's Irish. And you're white. You're not Mexican. It's like, well, I'm full-blown Mexican. I'm just really, I'm like basically milk white. And I have an Irish last name. So a lot of people really do get mixed up about it. But, you know, every time I'm just like, I mean, I'm full-blown Mexican. I just have some Irish roots, man. And since it's the side of my dad's, that's why, you know, it will continue carrying on because it's his last name. If it was from my mom, people won't even know.
Imagine that. Immigrants in Mexico. Oh, my goodness. I mean, this is radical stuff we're talking about here, Pato. sorry. Let's see. Where shall we go next? All right. Good question here from Craig Johnson on Facebook. Says, congratulations on the 2018 Indy Lights title. With that said, the Lights title brings with it a significant amount of money to be used the following season, talking about the $1 million awarded from IndyCar and Mazda, the Mazda Road to Indy. He says, as a rookie to the series, which do you think is more difficult for young drivers, making the transition from the Lights car to IndyCar or finding the money to ensure that someone can race an entire season or longer? And I think he's just referring to the that $1 million is a help, but for the most part, you know, that's four races or so, depending on which
one,
including the Indy 500. So maybe more a question of, does that $1 million prize for the Lights champion each year, do you think that's enough of a jump start to help get you the rest of the way to a full season? How much does that help?
It helps to get started, but I think it is definitely, at least in my case, it is so hard to find money. It is so hard. I mean, it's crazy how hard it is. I think I got into the rhythm with a car in Sonoma decently well, so I probably have to go with the money finding is a lot harder. And the problem is that it takes so much time, and a lot of time, even if the off season is long, there's not enough time, you know? So, like, a lot of times they'll be like, oh, you know, they'll end up giving you some, like, I don't know, July, but it's like, well, dude, half of the season's already done, you know?
Yeah.
Especially if you need the money to start it. So, yeah, I'd have to go with just all the sponsors. It's just so hard. So I think that's the hardest part of everything, you know, not just driving.
Great point. We've got a fun one here from Reddit. L. Jones Arino says, Pato and Marshall, if, together, you started a tag team in Lucha Libre, what would be your character's backstory, and what would our names be in Spanish? I might have to lean on you for this one. I'm a big WWE fan, and definitely have a great appreciation for Lucha Libre, but I might need some help here on what our tag team names would be and what our backstory might be.
The backstory, like, because I have no idea what a backstory is.
Our origin, you know, who we are, how we came to be the characters we're representing in Lucha Libre. I mean,
all right.
Fat Man and Little Boy like a pretty easy one, but I don't know if that's the obvious direction to go.
Huh. Let's go with, we are,
See, you thought these are going to be easy questions about racing. No. That's not the Week in IndyCar podcast.
Okay. We'll do something. We'll do something pretty savage. It'll be like, well, we were born in Chihuahua.
Okay.
And we had to fight people. Well, we had to hunt things to find food.
Wow, this is sad already.
We then came into the sport. We knew how to hustle around to find what we needed, so we thought that this could be quite fitting for us.
And racing parallel
well.
Yeah, okay, I got that.
So maybe this was a little bit easier for us. We didn't have to fight for food every day. And then
maybe I'd be the
our
wall.
Names.
Yeah, maybe. Okay, I'm seeing. And I don't necessarily mean a border wall. I just mean someone, you know, racing-wise, that maybe you, being the fast one in the ring, would speed around and throw our opponents into me, and like a racing circuit, I'd be the wall they crash into and crumble? I don't know. You think there's something there?
Okay, so I'll be rápido.
Okay.
Okay, and then you're gonna be. How do you say bulldozer in Spanish?
I don't know. I only speak English. It might just be bulldozer. I don't know, but with a great accent.
Bulldozer. No, it would have to be
the El Gordo bulldozer.
It could be. We could be like. How do you say bulldozer? Or just something really big.
Or just wide and heavy. You know. I mean, you know.
Just something to stop people.
Yeah. Exactly. Maybe, I don't know how you say refrigerator in Spanish, but, you know, something in there, just a big...
El rompehuesos. El rompehuesos. Rompehuesos is the bone destroyer.
There we go. Y rapido. Oh, this would be... All right. We got it. See? Again, these are our listeners, man. This is the best part.
Yeah, rapido y rompehuesos.
That's a hashtag we're going to need to get out here shortly. If we're not careful, our pal Roger Warwick might be doing a cartoon about that before the show's over. All right, well, look, I think we aced the question here, El Jones Arena, and thank you. Let's see, where should we go next? Let's go back to Twitter. All right, Tono Villalobos asks, I have one for Pato. Who is your motor racing idol?
So many people ask me, and I always change my mind. So I'm going to have to go with...
Say Colton Herta.
No one.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I you know what?
Say your teammate. That would be really nice.
I respect a lot of people, but, like, someone that I've always idolized, like, I mean, I see Lewis Hamilton, like, oh, my God, Ayrton Senna, blah, blah, blah. But, honestly, I never really, like, I don't know. I mean, I don't have anybody, like, oh, my God. You know, ever since I was a little kid, obviously, if you tell me, like, you know, who would you like to have a career as, I'd go full-blown Lewis Hamilton.
That's hard not to go in that direction. Let's see. Steve Hamilton throws in another one here on Twitter. He says, Pato, after a pretty stellar debut at Sonoma, what are your realistic goals for the season, and how good can this, quote, new... Harding Steinbrenner team be?
You know, I feel like I know I'm going to have a good car. I'm confident that they're going to give me the tools to be able to do my job. So the objective should always be high. So it should always be top fives, podiums, wins. I don't see it that far off, to be honest. I mean, it's obviously going to be way harder than anything I've ever done, but it doesn't mean it's going to be impossible. So I know the speed is there. I mean, I proved it in Sonoma, and I think, you know, I think I can get, you know, a win or a few wins next year, and I mean, I should be fighting in the front, and I feel like that's what's expected from me now, so I don't really have a choice. So I'm gonna go with that.
I like that. World domination, though, year two. That's the other plan, right? So just be sure, you know, if you're not a champion by year two, just retire. I think that's all I'm suggesting here. Let's see. Let's go to, again, this is why I love the show, man. It's listener-driven, and it's fun and serious. One here from Ryan Terpstra on Twitter. It says, Pato, last time you were on the show, you were looking for Netflix recommendations. What did you settle on, and was it any good?
What did I settle on? Honestly, I didn't watch anything because I've been traveling a lot. And I've been spending, I don't know, I've been very outdoorsy lately. I've gone hiking, and I've done a lot of things, and kind of faded my way from TV. Something that I did play on TV that I haven't played in a while, and I played with my friends, and it was super enjoyable. Black Ops Zombie 1, the first game, and it is so, it's the best zombies ever created, and we got to level 34. Jeez. So that was pretty decent.
Yeah, I mean, unless there's 47,000 layer levels, and then you've got, actually got a long ways to go, but...
And it takes a while. I mean, it took like 3-4 hours.
That's, I'm jealous. But I do remember, I mean, when I was your age, yeah, you could do that for 4 hours, and it didn't matter. When you get older, you might be surprised that finding 4 hours to play video games, it's not really, well, it's not part of many married adult professional schedules, but again, I'm jealous, because in my youth, it was racing games, nonstop, playing Grand Prix and all kinds of other things on the PC when it came out, so, but yeah, I guess.
Dude, I'm so bad in racing games. I'm terrible. I always just, like, destroy and just, like, drill people.
Wow. Well.
I got banned from iRacing, actually.
What did you do? What did you do?
I don't know. I mean, I just... were like...
Who are you crashing into?
I don't know. I mean, it's because... Since it's, like, a computer game, like, it's not real. Like, it doesn't even feel real at all. So I, like... I don't know, I felt fake. So I was like, you know what, I'm just going to drill people. And I waited for the guy leading. And it was like a pack of three. And I just, boom, and I destroyed all three of them. And then I got an email like, that shouldn't be it, and blah, blah, blah. They have reported you. And I was like, okay, whatever.
I love the, why were you banned? I don't know. Then 30 seconds later, we find out, oh, I got bored and just started drilling people. Yeah, there might be a little bit of linkage there between those
so
two.
So fun, man.
Well, that's true, especially if you're having a bad race.
Yeah, like I was, I think, sixth or something, and my setup was terrible. So I was like, you know what, I'm just going to have fun.
Amusing
yourself.
Wasn't
so fun for them.
Amusing yourself is a good thing. Here's a question in from Facebook, Justin Ford, who says... What is your least favorite corner or sector of all the tracks you've been to? And Justin says his least favorite is Sebring's Turn 10. So, yeah, is there a corner either in your open wheel, your sports car time, where you're like, man, I hate this, either because it's overly complex or boring or just dumb?
Hold on. Give me time to think. So, I like St. Pete. I like Barber. That's a good question, but I'd probably have to go with maybe, I think just like a frustrating corner, I guess, and, geez, that's a good one. I really enjoyed Portland, so nothing in Portland, nothing Road America. Road America's pretty cool. I really enjoyed, Toronto. So, I mean, does it have to be road course or oval?
Be whatever you want. I'm this whole time I've been praying you wouldn't say Indy Turn 1 because you'd be banned from the sport along with iRacing as well if you said that.
Yeah, no, that's why I'm not saying Indy.
Well, think about it, and if you got an idea, then...
We'll get back to it.
Yeah, no worries. Let's see. This comes in from Paul Davis on Facebook. He says, Pato, it seems that with the great race fans in Mexico that are primed and ready for an IndyCar race date and prominent sponsorship from a Mexico-based corporation, have you met Adrian Fernandez? He's been great with sponsors like Tecate and such. Anything you might be able to share on trying to help advance this desire you have, and I think many have, to really celebrate IndyCar's Mexican fans by getting a date on the calendar sometime in the future?
I do know Adrian. We talk once in a while. We've gone to dinner and stuff, and we talk about racing, obviously. The problem is now the government changed here in Mexico, and it's... I don't know if it changed for the good. So it's going to be a little bit harder than what it would be if things didn't change, because a lot of things are changing. I don't even think Formula One will have a Grand Prix after their contract is over. unless someone comes up with a lot of money.
Yeah.
I think an IndyCar is way more accessible. So hopefully by 2020 we can get something done. First off, I have to give results and I have to be winning. I have to start winning for it to work. So that's the first step. And the second step is going to be obviously finding someone that's going to take care of it. But me fighting up front is gonna make everything so much easier.
Let's go to Reddit here. And I love the usernames. Hawaiian Steak asks if you can go into detail about the driving differences between your lights car that you won the title in with Andretti Autosport and the Indy car that you drove for the Harding team, the Harding Steinbrenner team at Sonoma. Just curious about driving technique differences, either braking or turning, etc. What are some of the big things you're like, okay, got to do this differently or adapt my style in certain ways to handle the big car compared to the smaller training car?
I think one of the big ones is definitely the brakes. The Indy car brakes really, really well. You can brake so much deeper, and the braking zone isn't as long. So the work that you do on the brake isn't as, I guess it's not as long as Indy Lights, and it's just a bit more, everything's just a bit more sudden. So that was a little bit to get used to, just knowing that the car will stop and putting the confidence on it. And then another, probably the other thing would be just the Firestone tires are so different to the Coopers. You can just, like, especially in the Reds, you can just, like, you can throw that Indy car into a corner, and the thing is just going to stick.
Mm.
And that was very different to the Cooper, obviously, because, you know, they're way softer, the profile of the tire is thicker. But something that was really nice about the Indy car that I really enjoyed, one, the gearbox actually works really well, and it doesn't clog, and two, I was so amazed on how smooth the power delivery was. The Indy Lights has more, it's just a way more sudden because of the torque. So yeah, I mean, just a few things. It just, the Indy car is just basically just a lot, not that it's easier to drive, but it's just a lot nicer to drive because it's more of a proper downforce race car because it's meant to go a lot faster. So just those are a few differences that they have. I probably have to go with brakes, tires, and just like the way that the IndyCar like goes over the bumps and just like power delivery and everything.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how this continues to evolve for you as well, I think, because while you've had some time in an IndyCar, it's just really interesting to speak with the veterans who've come to know every little characteristic and trait of the car across so many different tracks, even over years, where they have that ability to say, you know, you remember back in 2015 at turn 5 at wherever, and we made that setup change and it did this, and I really am wanting us to be able to go in that direction. Just some of those things too, whereas you gain more mileage and more laps, just be interesting to see how your driving style evolves, and also your ability to call back to some of those things that, you know, hopefully will make you a successful IndyCar driver. Let's jump back here to, let's see, I'm not sure which platform we'll go to. We'll go to Facebook here. This comes from Carlos Gallardo, who says, for Pato, with which driver from the past or present would you maybe find in common with your racing style? I like that one. You know, not so much who your hero might be, but if you're looking at any drivers you maybe compete with today or any you might have seen in the past, are there any drivers where you go, hey, you know, we have a similar approach or method in what we do on track?
Huh, that's a good one. I think I don't know. I mean, I don't want to be like, oh, I think I drive like him.
Ayrton Senna, Jim Clark.
I think this year in some race or so, I think it was Portland, I got compared to Power, and one, I think very highly of Power, and I think, you know, it's very humbling to hear that I've gotten kind of a little bit of his racing style, kind of just plain up speed. Like, yeah, he's just so fast. So I feel like that was pretty cool to hear that. So I'd go with Power.
I can see that for sure. Let's see, where else shall we go here? Good one in from Fletgen01 on Reddit. Says, Pato, would love to see you and Colton Herta venture into the campgrounds at Mid-Ohio. Maybe make a social media piece out of it. Drivers have done this before and have built some great lifelong fans because of it. It says, we camp every year and love seeing drivers stop by in a golf cart, take a few photos, sign some autographs around the track. It says, I'm sure you have commitments on Saturday before the race, but if you have the chance to do so, we would happily be your starting point. And that comes in from Nick Fletcher on Reddit. What about that? You've seen some of that, for example, in IMSA, like at Sebring, right? The infield there, Green Park. That's kind of a famous place to go. Sometimes drivers will go and spend some time over there because there's tens of thousands of fans. What do you think about this as kind of something new, Pato? Not just Mid-Ohio, as Nick mentioned, but if there are tracks where there are, you know, a lot of fans congregated, what do you think about being, you know, the young guns, the rookies, who, even though folks might not know you as well as some of the veterans, make an effort to go out, make new fans, just do some outreach?
Yeah, I'm actually all about that. I always try to do that in weekends. Obviously, I've never been in IndyCar, so usually when I go, no one notices me, no one wants to take a picture with me, so maybe hopefully that changes a little bit next year.
That would suck, going out there and you just, well, all right, we'll go hang out by the bathroom.
Yeah, like you're there and you wait a few minutes and know it, like one person, like, hey, man, can I have a picture? And everybody else is like, who's this kid?
Yeah, and you don't want to be the guys tooling around on the golf cart, you and Cole, like, hey, anybody want an autograph? People going, I have no idea, what are you here for? Are you guys, what are you guys taking out the trash? Are you guys, what are you?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, still, don't be afraid to venture out. I love.
Oh no! I like that idea. I probably will. I actually, whenever I have free time, I always like to go watch. Either if it's like Indy Lights, or obviously this year I got to see Indy Cars, but next year, if I get a chance to see like Indy Lights, Pro Mazda, USF races, qualifying and stuff, I always go out and choose to go see them because I think it's just better than watching them on TV.
No argument there, my man. Well, let's spend the rest of our time getting through the final questions that have come in on Twitter. Let's see. Evan Kramer says, Pato, your arrival onto the IndyCar scene was nothing short of amazing. I guess with a little bit of hindsight now, a few months, was it an overwhelming experience for you? And how is that registered in general since surprising a hell of a lot of people by jumping into the Firestone Fast Six in your debut?
It has sunk in yet. It has sunk in. It was a little bit overwhelming just because there was so much media coming out of it. And qualifying fifth, you know, it's great. Ending ninth is very well. But, you know, I didn't get a podium. I didn't win the race. I couldn't even imagine what it would be like if I would have won the race or been in a podium or something. But I think it kind of gave me an idea to grasp of like what I had done and how hard it is to do it in a series like IndyCar. I think it's the hardest championship to win in the world. I think it's the most competitive series in the world. And I don't know, man. It was cool that I got to do that, but I guess I set the bar really high, so expectations are extremely high now. And but I'm all about it. I mean, I wanna give results. I wanna be fighting up the front. I'm not here to be smelling 15, 20 tails in the back of the field. I wanna be fighting in the front, and I wanna be a top guy that people wanna cheer and want to win. So that's, I mean, it's harder to think that whenever you know that, you know, you're kind of, when you have like a, you know, like a top 10, top 15 car, but when you know that you're going to have something that can challenge for wins, you can't set your bar lower than that. I mean, if you have a car that's going to win, you need to put your bar high, and you got to say, I can win races, I can beat podiums, I can fight for championships, because if that's what you have, then that's what you better get out of it, because if not, then you're going to be out of a job. So it's going to be interesting. I mean, I've done one race so far, and I'm really looking forward to getting the season started, and we'll see what I've got against all these veterans.
Let's go to Colin Young as we wind things down, my man, and asks... And this, I think, he asked me to explain this, but I think you might be able to bring a better angle to it, knowing you've come up the Mazda road to Indy, been in IMSA, now you're going to IndyCar. Colin says, can you explain how driver's safety gear varies between series? And he says, watching some Indian NASCAR guys at the Chili Bowl made me wonder whether the race suits, the shoes, the helmets, and whatnot are the same. You know, if, for example, if Connor Daly races an IndyCar, then goes and does Xfinity, then midgets, is he changing into different suits to meet different specifications from each series? So curious on your end, as someone who's had to come up, and I'm guessing at each level, you've had the series say, oh, but we want you to add this piece that we say you need, etc. What's that like for you with your safety gear moving from series to series?
I usually stick with a brand or stick with something that I like and keep going on with it. Usually, if, like, you know, the higher you go, the more high-tech that things become. So in for example, on the road to Indy, I mean, the specifications of what you need are pretty close to IndyCar. IndyCar needs just a little bit more, or things have to be just maybe a little bit newer. Maybe you need more things because they have to be ready if something happens to one piece. But other than that, I'm not sure about NASCAR and everything. I'm sure it's pretty close to it. But I know in our kind of market, it's the lightest you can find with the best technology. And obviously, you know, then looks come into play. Like, you know, what looks good, what's going to be well presented. For next year, I've got Sparco supplying all my driver wear. And Stilo's doing all my helmets. I think it's the best helmet on the market. I've always been with Arai, the guy that helped me with Arai then switched to Stilo, and I got to try out the Stilo, and I was like, you know, this thing is really, really good. So, yeah, that's kind of my take on it.
And there are some definite specifics too. In IndyCar, for example, there is the mandatory Xylon strip across the top of your visor. The visor strip there, it's meant to add further rigidity and protection in case of you know, something hitting it, some sort of strike there that in most other series would not be required. Hans devices are now mandatory in many series, some like NASCAR, as folks will see, and also with you know, midgets and sprints and others. There's a lot of options, alternatives to it. You aren't, you know, specifically required to use a Hans, but some sort of head and neck protection device. But yeah, it's interesting because if you look at IndyCar, you'll see that while it could be an OMP or a Sparco, name the variety of brands, a Bell and a Rye, you know, there are preferences, but there are some things that are just about, you know, almost uniform in terms of standardization. There's some other series where there's more creativity allowed or more personal choice given of, okay, you've got to have something that achieves this thing, but you can pick from a lot of different vendors to get that done. So I think in most cases, what you wear and would have an IndyCar would suit you just about everywhere you might go. I don't know if some of the other series would necessarily do it going the opposite way. Someone coming, you know, from the Chili Bowl to race the Indy 500, they'd probably be spending a fair amount of money having to upgrade to a lot of things used in our little world. Well, we are we're at the end of the show, my man. When are we going to see you in an IndyCar for the first time? Are you coming out for the test at WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca before Circuit of the Americas?
Nope. Well, yeah, no. Up until COTA, the first time out for us.
And what do you? What have you done? I know, obviously, iRacing has banned you, but are you able to spend any time? Have you, or will you be spending some time on a simulator through Honda or Dallara or whatever you might be able to get
access
to?
It'd be nice, but nothing yet.
So you might be turning up straight up stone cold.
Yeah, that's probably what's going to end up happening. So I'm probably going to just turn up Dakota stone cold, not being in a car in like 6-7 months, and I'm just going to whip it.
I love it. You know, there was one other question, which I should have asked in the open, but hey, we'll use it to close. So you are, I mean, this is a pretty cool thing. You're back-to-back champion, if we consider the fact that you and your performance tech team dominated the final IMSA season in the Prototype Challenge class, won all but one race, won that 2017 PC title, then went on to win the 2018 Indy Lights Championship. A little bit surprised, my man, that knowing that you're coming into IndyCar full-time, we won't have you next weekend or the weekend following at Daytona for the Rolex 24 in some kind of car. Was that just something where you weren't able to find something you like to do, some of the endurance races in IMSA? Are you still looking? What's the deal?
No, I mean, I would be super interested, but there was two options, and I said yes to one of them, but then nothing came true. Nothing came through, and then it just kind of fell through, and I was like, well, don't have a ride for them.
Well.
Yeah, so just someone, I guess, don't really want to say who, but there was,
Roger
you know, the guys that they have,
Roger
Penske. Either they were already under contract. No, not Roger Penske.
I'm kidding, obviously.
It was two DPI teams.
Got it. Well, keep pushing, my man. It'll be strange to not have you in sports cars, so keep doing whatever you can to get yourself back in, because it's stuff like this where, you know, the young open-wheel drivers, even some of the veterans, they definitely look to those added miles they get at Daytona in testing and you name it, just to really come into that IndyCar season warmer than the rest, because they've been able to put in miles upon miles, at least in something, so that they are warm.
Exactly. No, I mean, I totally agree. Totally agree. So, you know, maybe something comes up last minute, but I highly doubt it.
Yeah. Well, go and kick some butt at the Race of Champions this weekend and tell Vettel his days are numbered. You know, ask him for the numbers to folks at Ferrari because you plan on replacing him in the future. Just, you know, plant some seeds, man. Let them know what kind of hell they're in for.
Hey, man, look, I'm just here to beat you.
Pato, you're the best, man. Enjoy yourself this weekend. I look forward to seeing you here in a couple of weeks at Circuit of the Americas, and can't wait for you and Colton to have a really awesome rookie season along with the rest of IndyCar's rookies. It's going to be a great year, and thanks again, man, for calling in long distance from Mexico.
Oh, you're welcome, man. Thank you for the podcast, and I'm sure I'll see you soon.